本录音带由三级雅思网独家提供。
Insight into IELTS, the Cambridge IELTS course by Vanessa Jakeman and Claire McDowell, published by Cambridge University Press, 1999. This recording is copyright. Side 1. Unit 1. Orientating yourself to the text. Unit 1, Extract 1. You will hear one example and then 10 short conversations.As you listen, complete the table to show who the speakers are and why they are speaking. Listen to the example first.
Can I help you?
Yes. I am looking for a tie for my husband. Where would I find the men's department?
On the first floor. You can take the lift or the escalator.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The speakers are a sales assistant and a customer.The customer is asking where the men's department is. Now listen to the rest of the conversations and complete the table. After each conversation, you will hear this sound. Pause the tape here to allow time for writing. 1.
Can I take your coat?
Thank you.
And would you like something to drink before you order your meal?
Yes, please. Can we see the wine list?
Certainly.
Two.
Can I see your license, please, sir?
Yes, sir. Certainly.
Did you know you were exceeding the speed limit when you came over the hill just now? Our radar registered that you were travelling at 157 kilometres an hour.
Oh, really? I hadn't realised...
There's an on-the-spot fine of $280 for that, I'm afraid, sir.
Three.
Oh, I'm afraid I got stopped by the police for speeding today, dear.
Oh, no, David, you didn't, did you?
Yes, I got a fine of $280 on the spot.
That's dreadful. We can't afford that. You really should drive more slowly.
Now, I'd just like to recap on what we were talking about last week before going ahead with this week's lecture. We were, if I remember rightly, looking at the main causes of the Second World War, and I'd just like to go back to some of the points I made. But first, does anyone have any questions?
5. How
do I go about joining the table tennis club?
You need to fill in this form and show me your student card.
Is there a fee?
Yes, there's a joining fee of $15 and an annual subscription of $10.
6.
I'm afraid I haven't been able to finish the history essay, and I was hoping that you would give me an extension.
When do you think you could let me have it?
Well, I should be able to finish it by next Monday.
Well, okay. As long as I can have it by then. Yeah, that'll be fine.
7.
Did you manage to finish the history essay?
Nah, did you?
Nah, I couldn't find the books in the library.
Nah, neither could I.But fortunately, the lecturer has given me an extension. You should go and see her. She's very helpful.
8.
Would you like something to drink with your meal? Drinks are complimentary on this flight.
I'll just have a soft drink, thanks. Can I have a Coke?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll have to go and get you one when I finish serving this row.
Oh, okay.
9.
Morning, Mr. White. Come in. And what can I do for you today?
Well, Doctor, I'm having difficulty sleeping. I often wake up at 3 in the morning and I just can't get back to sleep.
I see. And how long has this been going on?
Oh, about a month now. I wonder if you could prescribe something.
10.
Good morning, everybody. Now, first of all, I'd like to start by welcoming you all to the college. We're delighted to have you here, and we hope you're going to enjoy yourself. And I'm the college principal.
Unit 2. Listening for specific information. Unit 2. Extract 1. You will hear 7 short answer phone messages. Listen and complete the messages on the telephone pad. A.
Oh, hi, everybody. It's Julia here. It's Thursday afternoon. I'm just ringing to confirm dinner on Friday night. I'll be there about 7:30. Can't wait to see you all.
B.
Johnson's Repairs here. Your video recorder is now ready for collection. There's a charge of £50 to be paid when you come and pick it up.
C.
Message for Mary Brooks. This is the University Bookshop here. The book you ordered on Asian economies is not available. I'm afraid it's out of print. Sorry about that. Let me know what you want us to do.
D.
Hi, this is Nick. I've left my football boots at home today and I desperately need them for the match this afternoon. If someone gets this message, could you please bring them into the college before 12 o'clock? The new boots, not the old boots. Thanks a lot. See ya.
E.
Dr. Boyd, surgery here. I'm afraid we'll have to cancel Ms. Taylor's appointment tomorrow, as unfortunately Dr. Boyd has the flu. Could she come on Monday at 3:30 p.m. instead and ring back to confirm she can make that time?
F.
Oh, hello. Message from Mr. Lee, Newport Supermarkets here. I believe you lost a pair of glasses yesterday. We found a pair at the checkout. We're keeping them at the customer service desk. Would you like to come in and see if they're yours?
G.
Hello, this is Sam. Message for Nick. We're having a farewell party for Professor Hall on Saturday. You know, he's going to China for 2 years. Give us a ring on 9818-4078.
Unit 2, Extract 2. You will hear a tourist asking about cruises around the harbour. First, look at questions 1 to 7. Now listen to the first part of the conversation and complete questions 1 to 7 on the table.
Good morning, Blue Harbour Cruises. How can I help you?
Good morning. Can you tell me something about the different cruises you run?
Well, we run 3 cruises every day, each offering something slightly different.
Oh, let me just get a pencil so I can make a note of this. Right.
Firstly, there's the Highlight Cruise. Then we do the Noon Cruise. And we also have our Coffee Cruise.
Could you tell me a bit about them? When they leave, how often, that sort of thing?
Well, the Highlight Cruise is $16 per person. And that leaves at 9:30 every morning and takes 2 hours to go around the harbour.
Right, 9:30. And do you get coffee or refreshments?
No, but there's a kiosk on board where you can buy drinks and snacks. And we do provide everyone with a free souvenir postcard.
Right.
And then there's our Noon Cruise at $42 per person. This is more expensive, but of course it takes longer. And for that price you get a 3-course lunch.
Oh, that sounds good. And what about the last one?
That's the Coffee Cruise. Well, that's $25 each. It takes 2.5 hours.
When does that leave?
At 2:15 daily.
And presumably the coffee is included?
Yes, and sandwiches are served free of charge.
Now you have some time to look at questions 8 to 10. As you listen to the rest of the conversation, answer questions 8 to 10.
I think the coffee cruise would suit us best. The lunch is included at the hotel. Can I book for 2 people for tomorrow, please?
No need to book. Just be down at the quay at 2:00. All our cruisers depart from jetty number 2.
Can you tell me where that is exactly?
Yes. Number 2 jetty is opposite the shops. It's clearly signposted.
Right. And can you tell me, is there a commentary?
Yes, there's a commentary on all the cruises.
Is it possible to listen to the commentary in Japanese? My friend doesn't speak much English.
It's in English only, I'm afraid. But the tour guides usually speak some Japanese, so she'll be able to ask questions.
Oh, fine.
Oh, and one other thing. I should just mention that it gets extremely hot on the upper deck at this time of year, so it's a good idea to wear a hat. Otherwise, you could get quite badly sunburnt.
Right, I'll remember that. Thanks very much.
Unit 2. Extract 3. You will hear a man talking on the telephone, arranging to hire a car. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 10. As you listen to the conversation, complete the form by filling in the numbered spaces 1 to 5 and by circling the correct answer for questions 6 to 10.
Good morning, Golden Wheels Car Rentals. How can I help you?
Yes, good morning. I'd like to hire a car, please.
Can I just get your name, sir?
Yes, Frank Moorcroft.
Oh, could you spell that, please?
Yes, Frank, F-R-A-N-K, Moorcroft, M-O-O-R-C-R-O-F-T.
And the address?
My home address?
Yes, sir, we need your home address.
Oh, right, okay. Flat 26, 19 Lake Road, Richmond.
And your telephone number there?
3697... 4500.
Are you the holder of a current driver's license?
Yes, I am.
Could I have the number, please, sir?
Just let me find it. Here we are. UT9128.
Right. Now, what kind of vehicle were you looking for?
I was thinking of doing some off-road driving.
When did you want to collect the vehicle?
Tomorrow, if that's possible.
Tomorrow's the 23rd of June. Well, all the four-wheel drives are out, but we've got a nice family-sized vehicle, a Ford. I could let you have that in the morning. Almost as good as a four-wheel drive.
Okay, I'll take that. What is the cost of the Ford?
Well, the daily rate is $70, but it's only $50 a day if you have it for more than 3 days.
I'll need it for the whole week.
Okay, and there's an additional $15 for insurance, which brings it up to $65. We do recommend that you take the insurance.
Right, so that's a total of $65 a day, not $50.
Yes, sir, that's correct. And would you like to collect it from our city branch, or at the airport, or your hotel?
I can pick it up in the city.
And how will you be paying for that? Cash, check, or credit card?
Do you take traveller's checks?
No, sorry.
I'll pay by credit card, then.
Right, thank you very much. We'll see you in the morning, sir.
Unit 3. Identifying detail. Unit 3, Extract 1. You will hear a conversation between two friends who haven't seen each other for a long time. First, look at questions 1 to 6. For each of the questions, Three alternatives are given. Decide which of the alternatives, A, B, or C, best fits what you hear on the tape, and circle the appropriate letter. You will see that there's an example which has been done for you. On this occasion only, the conversation relating to the example will be played first.
Hello, Sue. Fancy meeting you here.
It is Sue Johnson, isn't it?
Oh, hi, Jill. It must be ages since we've seen each other.
What a surprise. How are you?
Yes, well, I'm fine. Just got back from 2 years teaching in Hong Kong, actually.
I thought you'd gone into computing or nursing.
No. I ended up being a teacher, after all. And how about you?
Oh, fine. Things are going quite well, in fact.
Jill says she was teaching in Hong Kong, so A has been circled. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Now listen carefully to the conversation and answer questions 1 to 6.
Hello, Sue. Fancy meeting you here. It is Sue Johnson, isn't it?
Oh, hi, Jill. It must be ages since we've seen each other. What a surprise. How are you?
Yes, well, I'm fine. Just got back from 2 years teaching in Hong Kong, actually.
I thought you'd gone into computing or nursing.
No. I ended up being a teacher, after all. And how about you?
Oh, fine. Things are going quite well, in fact.
So, what have you been up to over the last 3 years?
Working, studying, you know, the usual things. Oh, and I got married last year.
Oh, congratulations. Anyone I know?
Yeah, you might remember him from our college days. Do you remember Jerry? Jerry Fox?
Jerry? Was he the one with the dark hair and beard?
No, that was Sam. No, Jerry's got blonde hair and glasses. He's pretty tall. Well, we got married, finally.
Great. And where did the wedding take place? Was it here in London?
No, in the end we decided to get married in Scotland. Jerry's parents lived there, so we were married in a small village church with the mountains in the background.
Oh, fabulous. Mm. Have you got any pictures?
Well, funny you should ask. I have actually got a couple here. They're a bit battered because I've been carrying them around in my bag.
Oh, never mind. Let's have a look.
Yeah.
Oh, don't you look wonderful? Who are those people behind you?
Oh, that's my older sister, Clara.
She looks like you.
You think so? Everyone says that, but we can't see it.
Is she married now?
Yes, and she's got 3 children. A girl and 2 boys as well.
Wow, imagine having twins!
Look, why don't we have dinner together and catch up on a few things? Would you like to come over one evening?
That'd be lovely.
What about next Friday evening?
Fine. What time? Shall I come over about 8 o'clock?
Oh, come out 7:30. I'm usually home around 6:30, so that'd give me plenty of time to get dinner ready.
Fine. And one last thing. Where do you live? What's the address?
Good thinking. Here's my card. The address is on the back. We've got a flat in an old house. We live on the 3rd floor of a large old house. The house has been converted into flats. You know, it's a typical London flat. So when you arrive, you'll need to press the bell 2nd from the top.
The bell 2nd from the top. Okay.
There's a little intercom arrangement, so I can let you in.
Right. Okay. See you on Friday, then.
Unit 4. Identifying main ideas. Unit 4, Extract 1. You will hear one example, and then 8 short conversations. Listen once, and complete the introductory phrase column as you listen. First, listen to the example.
Guess who I saw today?
Who?
I ran into our old English teacher, Mr. Britton, in the supermarket.
Really?
Funny thing is, I didn't recognise him. He tapped me on the shoulder and I wondered who on earth it was. He's grown a beard and he looks quite different.
The introductory phrase is, guess who I saw today? Now listen and complete the first column. 1.
Can I help you?
Yes, well, I bought this tie last week for my boyfriend's birthday and... Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't like it. Could I change it for something else?
Certainly, madam, provided that it hasn't been worn and that you have the receipt.
Yes, here it is.
Okay. This tie looks as if it's been worn, I'm afraid. I can't put that back on the rack.
Oh, that's pretty.
You know, John, I'm getting quite worried about Maria.
Why? What's happened?
Well, I was speaking to her teacher today after school. She tells me that Maria often doesn't finish her homework. And when she does, well, the standard is often pretty poor.
Maybe I'd better have a word with her then. And now, closer to home, and the health service. The Prime Minister announced today that the government would be looking at ways of reducing hospital waiting lists in Australian hospitals. At present, patients can wait up to 2 years for a hospital bed for operations not considered to be life-threatening. A spokesperson for St. Michael's Hospital said some patients wait for over 2 years for operations such as hip replacements and other so-called minor surgery.
Four.
Now, about this picnic. Where are we going to go?
Well, I thought we might all meet up at the Opera House at 2 o'clock and walk through the Botanical Gardens and find a nice spot down near the water. What do you think?
Great.
Five.
You know the computing assignment we've got?
Yeah.
Have you finished yours yet?
No. Have you?
No. That's why I asked. I'm having a lot of difficulty understanding the topic.
Why don't we go and see the lecturer about it and ask him? He's a pretty friendly sort of guy. I'm sure he won't mind.
Good idea.
Six.
Excuse me. I'm trying to find a copy of A Guide to English Grammar. I can't find it on the shelf.
Let me have a look. It may be waiting to be put back on the shelves. Oh. Hold on a minute. Yes, it came back in this morning, but a couple of people have reserved it already. Would you like to reserve it after that?
Oh, no, thanks. I think I'll go and buy a copy for myself.
Seven.
Hey, you guys. Could you two stop playing on the walking machine? It's not a toy, you know.
Oh, sorry. We were just trying it out. Isn't that what it's for?
If you're not going to buy it, you shouldn't use it.
Well, we don't know whether we're going to buy it if we don't try it, do we?
Eight.
Good afternoon, distinguished guests, family and friends, and students of this university. I'd like to extend a very warm welcome to you all and say how pleasing it is to see such a good turnout of parents and friends at today's graduation ceremony, which is, in my opinion, a most important day in the university calendar.
Now listen again, and this time complete the second column, topic, and the third column, how does the topic develop? We start with the example again.
Guess who I saw today?
Who?
I ran into our old English teacher, Mr. Britton, in the supermarket.
Really?
Funny thing is, I didn't recognise him. He tapped me on the shoulder and I wondered who on earth it was. He's grown a beard and he looks quite different.
The topic they are talking about is meeting an old teacher. They develop the topic by talking about the teacher's appearance. Now listen and complete the rest of the table. After each conversation, you'll hear this sound. Pause the tape here to allow time for writing. 1.
Can I help you?
Yes, well, I bought this tie last week for my boyfriend's birthday and, well, he doesn't like it. Could I change it for something else?
Certainly, madam, provided that it hasn't been worn and that you have the receipt.
Yes, here it is.
Okay. This tie looks as if it's been worn, I'm afraid. I can't put that back on the rack.
Oh, that's pretty. You know, John, I'm getting quite worried about Maria.
Why? What's happened?
Well, I was speaking to her teacher today after school. She tells me that Maria often doesn't finish her homework. And when she does, well, the standard is often pretty poor.
Maybe I'd better have a word with her then.
Three.
And now, closer to home, and the health service. The Prime Minister announced today that the government would be looking at ways of reducing hospital waiting lists in Australian hospitals. At present, patients can wait up to 2 years for a hospital bed for operations not considered to be life-threatening. A spokesperson for St. Michael's Hospital said some patients wait for over 2 years for operations such as hip replacements and other so-called minor surgery.
Now, about this picnic. Where are we going to go?
Well, I thought we might all meet up at the Opera House at 2 o'clock and walk through the Botanical Gardens and find a nice spot down near the water. What do you think?
Great.
Five.
You know the computing assignment we've got?
Yeah.
Have you finished yours yet?
No. Have you?
No, that's why I asked. I'm having a lot of difficulty understanding the topic.
Why don't we go and see the lecturer about it and ask him? He's a pretty friendly sort of guy. I'm sure he won't mind.
Good idea.
Six.
Excuse me. I'm trying to find a copy of A Guide to English Grammar. I can't find it on the shelf.
Let me have a look. It may be waiting to be put back on the shelves. Oh. Hold on a minute. Yes, it came back in this morning, but a couple of people have reserved it already. Would you like to reserve it after that?
Oh, no, thanks. I think I'll go and buy a copy for myself.
Seven.
Hey, you guys. Could you two stop playing on the walking machine? It's not a toy, you know.
Oh, sorry. We were just trying it out. Isn't that what it's for?
If you're not going to buy it, you shouldn't use it.
Well, we don't know whether we're going to buy it if we don't try it, do we?
Eight.
Good afternoon, distinguished guests, family and friends, and students of this university. I'd like to extend a very warm welcome to you all and say how pleasing it is to see such a good turnout of parents and friends at today's graduation ceremony, which is, in my opinion, a most important day in the university calendar.
Unit 4, Extract 2. You're going to hear a radio program about stamp design. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. For each of the questions, 3 alternatives are given. Decide which of the alternatives, A, B, or C, best fits what you hear on the tape, and circle the appropriate letter. Now listen to the first part of the program and answer questions 1 to 5.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Tell Me More, the program where you ask the questions and we provide the answers. And we've had a wide variety of questions from you this week. And the subject we've picked for you this week, in response to your many letters, is the production of postage stamps. And as usual, we've been doing our homework on the subject. So, who designs the postage stamps that we stick on our letters? Well, in Australia, the design of postage stamps is in the hands of Australia Post. In Britain, it's the Royal Mail that looks after stamps. And it seems that both countries have a similar approach to the production process. We discovered, to our surprise, that it can take up to 2 years to produce a new postage stamp. Why is that, I hear you ask? Surely it can't be all that difficult to design a stamp. In fact, it isn't. But it seems it's a lengthy business. Firstly, they have to choose the subjects, and this is done with the help of market research. Members of the general public, including families, are surveyed to find out what sort of things they would like to see on their stamps. They are given a list of possible topics and asked to rank them. A list is then presented to the advisory committee, which meets about once a month. The committee is made up of outside designers, graphic artists, and stamp collectors. If the committee likes the list, it sends it up to the board of directors, which makes the final decision. Then, they commission an artist. In Australia, artists are paid $1,500 for a stamp design, and a further $800 if the committee actually decides to use the design. So there's a possibility that a stamp might be designed, but still never actually go into circulation.
Now you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Now listen to the end of the program. As you listen, for questions 6 to 8, complete the notes in the spaces provided. And for questions 9 and 10, circle the correct answer.
So, what kind of topics are acceptable? Well, the most important thing is that they must be of national interest. And because a stamp needs to represent the country in some way, characters from books are popular. Or you often find national animals and birds. So, of course, the kangaroo is a favourite in Australia. With the notable exception of members of the British royal family, no living people ever appear on Australian or British stamps. This policy is under review, but many stamp enthusiasts see good reason for keeping it that way to avoid the possibility of people in power using their influence to get onto the stamps. Every year, the Royal Mail in Britain receives about 2,000 ideas for stamps, but very few of them are ever used. One favourite topic is kings and queens. For instance, King Henry VIII, famous for his 6 wives, has recently appeared on a British stamp together with a stamp featuring each of his wives. But despite the extensive research which is done before a stamp is produced,
It seems it's hard to please everybody. And apparently all sorts of people write to the post office to say that they loved or hated a particular series. The stamp that caused the most concern ever in Australia was a picture of Father Christmas surfing at the beach. And when you consider that the practical function of a stamp is only as a receipt for postage, I think perhaps the importance accorded to stamps has got out of all proportion. Well, that's all for today. If there's a subject you want us to tell you more about, drop us a line.
Unit 5. Seeing Beyond the Surface Meaning. Unit 5, Extract 1. You will hear an example and 8 short conversations. Listen and answer the question at the end of each conversation. Listen to the example first.
Mum, what do you think of my new shirt? Do you like it?
Oh, it's lovely, darling.
Oh, Mum.
Did the woman like the shirt? The answer is no. Now listen to the rest of the conversations and answer yes or no. 1.
Fantastic. This is the first day I've had off for months, and look at the weather. Would you believe it?
Oh, well, at least you've got the day to yourself. Never mind the weather.
Is the weather fine? 2.
Hi, Sue. It's Mario here.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Fine. I was wondering if you were free on Saturday evening. I've got some tickets for a concert. Would you like to come?
Oh, look, I'm sorry. I'd really like to, but, I'm studying for my exams at the moment, and, well, I'm sorry, I can't.
Okay, not to worry. Some other time then, I suppose.
Right. Sure.
Is the girl trying to avoid the date? 3.
I bought this mobile phone on Friday.
Is there a problem with it, sir?
Well, primarily it does not appear to function outside the metropolitan area, which means it fails to function as a mobile phone, as far as I can see.
Right. I'll just have a word with the manager and see what we can do.
Was the man satisfied with the phone? 4.
Excuse me, Minister. Can you tell us whether your government intends to increase student university fees in the next budget?
The government has every intention of ensuring that students will not be disadvantaged by any increase in fees, which it may be necessary to introduce, by offering grants and scholarships to students wherever possible.
Are university fees going to rise? 5.
I've just ordered a new MMX computer with 32-speed CD-ROM. I'm getting it tomorrow.
That's great.
It's twice the speed of the one we've got now, and much better for games.
Can't wait to see it.
Does the woman want to see the computer? 6.
What did the doctor have to say? Well, she said, if I want to get rid of this flu, I should stay in bed for the next 3 days, drink plenty of orange juice, and stay nice and warm.
That means you'll miss your football on Saturday.
No, I should be okay by Saturday.
Oh, okay. Too sick for school, but okay for football, eh?
Mum, that's not fair.
Is the boy very sick? 7.
I've just seen the new Bond movie.
Have you? I saw it on Saturday.
Wasn't it fabulous? Didn't you just love the special effects?
Yeah, they weren't bad. It was okay.
Did the woman like the movie? 8.
Michael, did you do this work yourself?
Yes, sir. Of course I did.
It seems to have been remarkably well done for you.
Guess I had a good day, sir.
Michael, I wasn't born yesterday.
No, sir.
Is the teacher pleased with the boy's work? Unit 5, Extract 2. You will hear a conversation between three friends who live in a student house together. Richard, Sue, and Frank. They are having a conversation about how the government should spend public money. Task 1. As you listen, complete the grid by placing a tick in the box next to the name of each speaker each time they speak. Which of them speaks most often?
Sue, who was that at the door?
Oh, someone collecting money for the local hospital again.
Did you give them anything?
No, Frank, I did not. I refuse to give money at the door to people. It annoys me the way they come round here on Sunday morning expecting us to donate money all the time.
Well, they're hardly likely to come round during the week, are they? Because anybody who can afford to donate money will be out of work. Anyway, Sue, I think they just make you feel guilty.
Richard, I beg your pardon.
You don't want to give any money, so you turn the situation round and blame them for knocking on your door.
Richard, that's not true. I'm happy to give money, but through the official channels. I just don't like people coming to my door.
Well, I tend to agree with Sue. I don't see why we should have to pay for the new hospital out of our pockets. We already pay our taxes. Income tax, purchase tax, you name it tax. The government should pay for the hospital out of general revenue, not the local residents.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, perhaps we don't need a hospital in this area anyway. Why can't people go to the general hospital in town? They've got all the facilities there.
Ah, but Sue, the day you need a hospital, you want it there, ready and waiting for you, close to home, not miles away. And besides, other people may not be able to travel into town like you. Old people, people without cars.
Oh, Frank, you know what I mean. Anyway, I still think that the government should pay for this kind of thing.
Ah, that's because you've grown up in a system where the state does everything for you from the cradle to the grave. But it doesn't work like that anymore. The party's over, I'm afraid, because there simply isn't enough money left in the bank to pay for all this stuff. You see, we're in
But most of the time they waste it. I mean, look at how much government money is spent on roads, on airports, on huge hotels, on space research, for instance, instead of on local social issues. If they
I'm sorry, but I can't agree with you there. Firstly, hotels are built privately, with private money, not government money. And as for space research, well, I think it's incredibly important.
Why, Frank? Tell me, why is space research so important?
Because it's pushing back the frontiers of science, quite literally. And also because you get some fantastic discoveries made as a result of this kind of research, and they have an immediate effect on our day-to-day lives.
Such as non-stick Teflon frying pans.
Well, yes. But there are other much more relevant examples. High-speed aircraft, for instance, the navigational equipment, the thermal clothing, all sorts of things.
Oh, nice to think that your up-to-date skiing clothes were originally designed for astronauts.
Oh, Richard, you're such a cynic.
Well, you guys can laugh, but I bet you by the year 2050, people will actually be shooting off to Mars on their holidays to get away from it all.
Oh, no thanks, not me.
You think I'm joking, don't you? The next great explorers of this world will be the astronauts. People with vision and courage to try and find new territories. You think it's just science fiction, but it isn't. It's real.
Well, I still think the government would be better advised to target some of the problems on this Earth before they go shooting off to Mars. How can we possibly talk about space travel when there's youth unemployment, crime, poverty? That's where our energy should be going. Into making sure that people have a roof over their heads and employment, because work gives people a sense of self. No one wants to be on the receiving end of charity all the time.
Here we go again. Lots of fine ideals, but
Richard,
at the end of...
Richard, you have to have ideals. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, I agree with Sue. I think she's right.
I don't know, you see. I get a funny feeling.
Task 2. You're going to hear the extract again. First, look at questions 1 to 8. For each of the questions, 4 alternatives are given. Listen and decide which of the alternatives, A, B, C or D, best fits what you hear on the tape, and circle the appropriate letter.
Sue, who was that at the door?
Someone collecting money for the local hospital again.
Did you give them anything?
No, Frank, I did not. I refuse to give money at the door to people. It annoys me the way they come round here on Sunday morning expecting us to donate money all the time.
Well, they're hardly likely to come round during the week, are they? Because anybody who can afford to donate money will be out at work. Anyway, Sue, I think they just make you feel guilty.
Richard, I beg your pardon?
You don't want to give any money, so you turn the situation round and blame them for knocking on your door.
Richard, that's not true. I'm happy to give money, but through the official channels. I just don't like people coming to my door.
Well, I tend to agree with Sue. I don't see why we should have to pay for the new hospital out of our pockets. We already pay our taxes. Income tax, purchase tax, you name it tax. The government should pay for the hospital out of general revenue, not the local residents.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, perhaps we don't need a hospital in this area anyway. Why can't people go to the general hospital in town? They've got all the facilities there.
Ah, but Sue, the day you need a hospital, you want it there, ready and waiting for you, close to home, not miles away. And besides, other people may not be able to travel into town like you. Old people, people without cars.
Frank, you know what I mean. Anyway, I still think that the government should pay for this kind of thing.
Ah, that's because you've grown up in a system where the state does everything for you from the cradle to the grave. But it doesn't work like that anymore. The party's over, I'm afraid, because...
Eight.
No matter how hard you try to justify the sport of fox hunting, the fact remains that animals are slaughtered simply to provide entertainment for humans.
Nine. Firstly, I would like to talk about the early life of J.F. Kennedy. Secondly, we will look at the period of his presidency. And thirdly, we will review the effects of his assassination. 10.
On the one hand, it may be advisable to study hard the night before an exam. On the other hand, it's wise to get a good night's sleep before sitting a test.
Unit 6, Extract 2. You're going to hear a student, Ben, talking to two other students and his tutor in a tutorial. First, look at questions 1 to 7. Now listen and complete the notes by filling in the numbered spaces 1 to 3 and labelling the diagram 4 to 7.
Okay, come on in. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Hello, Mark, Sally. Well, let's get going, shall we? Because we've got a lot of ground to cover this afternoon. It's Ben's turn to give his tutorial paper today. But remember, we do encourage questions from the rest of you, so do try to join in and ask questions.
Okay.
Now, I believe Ben's going to talk to us today about the exploration of the Red Planet.
That's right. I'm going to be looking at the recent landing by the Americans of a spacecraft on the planet Mars, and in particular focusing on the small rover robot.
Is that the little robot that functions as a geologist?
Yes, that's right. It's called a rover, like a land rover, I suppose. And it can detect the geological composition of the ground it's standing on. So Yes, it's a sort of geologist. It's actually quite amazing.
I heard it described as being like a microwave oven on wheels.
Well, from an appearance point of view, that's a fair description. I've photocopied a picture of it for you so that you can keep this for reference and make some notes, and I'll just hand that out now.
Oh, thanks.
Wow! You'd actually expect it to look more space-age than this, wouldn't you? Like, more sophisticated?
Okay, well, as you can see, it's quite small. It actually only weighs 16.5 kilograms.
Right. What kind of speed is it capable of, then?
Well, I suppose that depends on the terrain.
Mm.
But I understand that it has a top speed of 2.4 kilometers an hour, which isn't very fast, really.
Can you tell us how it works? Explain some of these things we can see here.
Well, first of all, on the top it's fitted with solar panels.
Mm-hmm.
It runs on solar energy, of course.
Does that mean it can't work at night?
Yes, indeed it does. I guess it sleeps at night. So, you have the solar panels on the top, and underneath, this is the part known as the warm box.
What's the purpose of that?
Well, at night, the temperatures on Mars can go below 100 degrees, so the warm box is designed to protect the electronics from the extreme cold.
Oh.
It's also fitted with two cameras on the front.
Okay. And what about its wheels?
It's got six aluminium wheels, each 13 centimetres in diameter. Each one has its own motor, so it's individually powered, which allows the vehicle to turn on the spot if necessary. And, as you know, aluminium is very light.
Mm. Now look at questions 8 to 10. Listen to the end of the conversation and complete the notes by filling in numbered spaces 8 to 10.
And how is it steered?
Good question. It's steered using virtual reality goggles, worn by someone back on Earth, believe it or not. Though, because the robot can't be manipulated in real time, it can't be steered in real time either.
What do you mean exactly?
Well, you see, it takes more than 11 minutes for a radio signal to travel from command headquarters in California to Mars, and another 11 minutes for the answer to come back.
You mean there's a time delay?
Yes, exactly. And the time delay, or time lag, means it can't be steered directly from Earth. So what they do is this. They photograph the area around the rover, and the scientists will decide where they want the rover to go.
In other words, they'll plot a course for the rover.
Exactly.
Okay, Ben, that's very interesting. Now, can you tell us anything about this space mission itself, and why Mars?
Well, people have been fascinated by Mars for a long time, and it's generally believed that Mars is the only other planet in the solar system to have abundant water.
Is it possible that people might one day be able to live on Mars?
Well, of course, there's a lot of work to be done yet, but theoretically, I can't see why not.
Thanks, Ben. That was very interesting.
Mm. Unit 7. Being aware of stress, rhythm, and intonation. Unit 7. Extract 1. Listen and compare these speakers' intonation patterns with your own. A.
Urban society began when hunter-gatherers learnt A. how to farm land, B. how to domesticate animals, and C. how to build permanent structures to act as shelter.
B.
There are three levels of government in Australia. Firstly, there is federal government, then there is state government, and thirdly, we have local government.
C.
There are three levels of government in Australia. Firstly, there is federal government, which looks after issues of national importance, such as immigration and defence. Then there is state government, located in each capital city, and which has responsibility for such things as education, the police, and urban and regional planning. And thirdly, we find local government, which controls services such as waste collection, public libraries, and childcare centres.
D.
Was Napoleon poisoned, or did he die of natural causes? The Napoleonic Society of America, an association of historians and collectors, has given a modern twist to this debate. They have done this by revealing the results of chemical analyses of hair said to have come from the head of the French emperor.
E. The many forms and styles of handwriting which exist have attracted a wide range of aesthetic, psychological, and scientific studies, each with its own aims and procedures. Moreover, each of the main families of writing systems, European, Semitic, East Asian, has its own complex history of handwriting styles. Unit 7, Extract 2. In this section, you will hear part of a lecture on child language acquisition. First, look at questions 1 to 10. Now listen and complete the notes in the numbered spaces 1 to 10.
Today, in our series of lectures on human language, we're going to be looking at the way in which children acquire language. The study of how people learn to speak has proved to be one of the most fascinating, important, and complex branches of language study. So, let's look at these three features in turn. Firstly, why is it fascinating? This stems from the natural interest people take in the developing abilities of young children. People are fascinated by the way in which children learn, particularly their own children. Secondly, it is important to study how we acquire our first language, because the study of child language can lead us to a greater understanding of language as a whole. The third point is that it's a complex study, and this is because of the enormous difficulties that are encountered by researchers as soon as they attempt to explain language development, especially in the very young child. In today's lecture, we will cover a number of topics. We will start by talking about research methods. There are a number of ways that researchers have investigated children's language, and these include the use of diaries, recordings, and tests. And we'll be looking at how researchers make use of these various methods. We will then go on to examine the language learning process, starting with the development of speech in young infants during the first year of life. This is the time associated with the emergence of the skills of speech perception. In other words, an emergence of the child's awareness of his or her own ability to speak. We will continue with our examination of the language learning process, this time by looking at language learning in the older child, that is, in children under 5. As they mature, it's possible to begin analysis in conventional linguistic terms. And so, in our analysis, we will look at phonological, grammatical, and semantic development in preschool children. In the second part of the talk, I would like to review some educational approaches to the question of how linguistic skills can be developed. In other words, how can we assist the young child to learn language skills at school? Initially, we will look at issues that arise in relation to spoken language. We will then look at reading and review a number of approaches that have been proposed in relation to the teaching of reading. Finally, we will conclude today's talk with an account of current thinking about the most neglected area of all, the child's developing awareness of written language.
Unit 7, Extract 3.
you're going to hear part of a lecture about the introduction of cane toads into Australia. First, look at questions 1 to 5. Now listen and answer questions 1 to 5.
In today's lecture, I want to look at one of Australia's least loved animals, but one that has an interesting history from which I think we can learn a fundamental lesson about problem solving. While Australia is famous for its many wonderful native animals, in particular the kangaroo and the koala, it also has some less attractive animals, many of which were actually brought to Australia in the 19th and 20th centuries. Perhaps the most well-known introduced animal is the rabbit, brought originally by the early settlers as a source of food. Another animal to be introduced by the settlers was the fox, for the purpose of sport in the form of fox hunting. But perhaps the most unusual animal ever brought here was the cane toad. Here's a picture of one. It's a large and, some people would say, very ugly species of toad, and was deliberately imported to this country by the sugarcane farmers in 1935 to eradicate the beetle which kills the sugarcane plant. The cane beetle is the natural enemy of the sugarcane plant. It lives in the cane and drops its eggs onto the ground around the base of the plant. The eggs develop into grubs, and then the grub eats the roots of the cane, resulting in the death of the plant. In the mid-30s, there was a serious outbreak of cane beetle, and the farmers became desperate to get rid of the pest which was ruining their livelihood.
Now you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Listen to the rest of the lecture and answer questions 6 to 10.
Meanwhile, news was trickling in from overseas about a toad, native to Central America, which supposedly ate the beetles which killed the cane. It was reported that the toad had been taken to Hawaii, where cane is also grown, and introduced with apparent success. So, with the backing of the Queensland authorities, the farmers arranged to import 100 toads from Hawaii. The toads were then released into the cane fields to undertake the eradication of the cane beetle. As predicted, the toads started to breed successfully, and within a very short time their numbers had swollen. But there was one serious problem. It turned out that cane toads do not eat cane beetles. And the reason for this is that toads live on insects that are found on the ground, and the cane beetle lives at the top of the cane plant, well out of reach of the toads. In fact, they never come into contact with each other. Now, you may well ask, how did this terrible mistake ever happen? And the reason is quite simply that the farmers were desperate to find a way of ridding their fields of the cane beetle, and so they accepted the reports that had been written without ever doing their own research. And the added irony is that in 1947, just 12 years later, an effective pesticide was developed which kills the beetle, thereby ensuring the survival of the sugarcane industry to this day. Meanwhile, much of tropical northeast Australia is infested with the cane toad, which serves no purpose whatsoever, and experts claim that the toad is spreading south in plague proportions. Now, as agricultural scientists, we have to ask ourselves, what lessons are to be learned from this tale? And I can think of three main points. Firstly, one should never rely on claims which are not backed up by evidence, i.e., in this case, evidence that the cane toad actually eats the grub of the cane beetle and thereby kills the pest.
Secondly, we should look very carefully at possible effects of introducing any living species into a new environment. And lastly, one should not allow one's decision-making to be influenced by a sense of desperation, which may cloud the issue. In other words, one should always seek objective advice.
IELTS, Sample Listening Test. You will hear a number of different recordings, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. There will be time for you to read the instructions and questions, and you will have a chance to check your work. All the recordings will be played once only. The test is in four sections. Write all your answers in the listening question booklet. At the end of the test, you will be given 10 minutes to transfer your answers to an answer sheet. Now turn to section one of your question booklet. Section 1. You will hear a conversation between a student and someone at an accommodation agency. First, look at questions 1 and 2. For each of the questions, three alternatives are given. Decide which of the alternatives, A, B, or C, best fits what you hear on the tape, and circle the appropriate letter. You will see that there is an example which has been done for you. On this occasion only, the conversation relating to the example will be played first.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm looking for a place to rent near the university.
What are you after? A house? A flat? A room?
Well, preferably a house if that's possible. There are three of us looking altogether. We thought we might share if we could find something suitable.
The student says he wants to rent a house, so A has been circled. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Now listen carefully and answer questions 1 and 2.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm looking for a place to rent near the university.
What are you after? A house? A flat? A room?
Well, preferably a house if that's possible. There are three of us looking altogether. We thought we might share if we could find something suitable.
So, something near the university?
Yes, if that's at all possible. We're all students, so it'd be good if we could find something within walking distance of the campus. None of us has a car, and we don't want to have to take public transport.
Yeah, well, everybody wants that, of course.
Yeah, I suppose they do.
Are you in your first year?
No, I've been here a year already. Last year we all lived in a hall of residence. That was really great. Even the food wasn't too bad. We had a lot of fun there, but in the second year they kick you out into the real world.
You now have a short time to look at questions 3 to 10. As you listen to the rest of the conversation, fill in the numbered spaces 3 to 6 in the table and answer questions 7 to 10 by circling the appropriate letters.
Okay, so let me have a look and see what we've got. Well, there's a 2-bedroom house in Newtown which is quite cheap.
Oh, that'd be good because it's very near the university. But if we all want our own rooms, it isn't really big enough.
Too small. Give that one a miss?
Yeah, I think so. Got anything else?
What about this?
3-bedroom flat close to the university. It's $400 a week.
Oh, that's too expensive.
All right. Oh, well, here's something that might interest you. It's a 3-bedroom house with garden.
Not bothered about the garden, but where is it?
Near the airport.
That's miles from the university.
Yes, it is quite far, but it's reasonably priced at $250 a week. Why don't you go and have a look?
Oh, all right, we will. Can I have the address?
Right. Well, it's at 14A Station Road, Botany.
Is anyone living there at the moment?
No, it's vacant.
And does it have any furniture?
Well, it says here that it's partially furnished.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, there's a kitchen table and chairs, 2 single beds, a double bed, 2 wardrobes, a kitchen cooker, and a washing machine. Not bad, really, for the money.
Is there a fridge?
It doesn't mention it here. I can let you have the key, and you can pop round and see for yourself.
Right, thanks. We'll do that.
Hello! You're back. How did you find the house?
Well, not bad. It's certainly large enough, and there's quite a big garden. But it's completely overgrown. You can hardly get out the back door because the grass is so high. We'd have to have it tidied up a bit before we moved in.
Okay.
The kitchen is fine, but there's an awful smell throughout the house.
Well, the place hasn't been occupied for a couple of months, so that's probably why it's a bit nasty. It'll be fine when you open up the windows and let some fresh air in.
Yeah, well, I think the landlord ought to pay to clean the carpets at least.
I can put that to him, though I'm not sure whether he'll agree. We can but ask.
Okay. Well, if he does, we'd probably be interested.
That is the end of section one. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now turn to section two. Section two. You will hear an extract from a radio program. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 14. Now listen and complete the notes by filling in the numbered spaces 11 to 14.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Capers. And this week we're looking at that most versatile and aromatic of plants, a fairly recent addition to the list of Australian agricultural produce, but nevertheless, a great favourite today, ginger. And in the studio to tell us all about it is Monica Maxwell.
Ginger, is one of my personal favourite spices. And I've got a number of wonderful recipes to share with you later on in the programme. So, what is ginger? Well, actually, it's a spicy-tasting root with an aromatic flavour. It's related to the bamboo family and has 100 different uses in the kitchen. The Chinese have cultivated it for years, particularly to use in medicine. Though you're probably more familiar with its culinary uses. But first, let's take a brief look at its history before we look at how it can be used, because it's had a very interesting history. Ginger originated in the southern provinces of China and in India, where it had been used in medicines and food preparation for over 5,000 years. The early traders who came upon the plant took it to many parts of the world, such as Nigeria, the West Indies, Central America, East Africa, and even Indonesia. Ginger became extremely popular because of its exotic aromatic properties and was highly valued by spice traders in the 17th and 18th centuries because they were able to sell it back in Europe for a very good price. Although Australia is now the largest producer of ginger in the world, it wasn't grown in Australia until the early 20th century. Now look at questions 15 to 20. Now listen to the rest of the talk and complete the table and the fact sheet by filling in numbered spaces 15 to 20. Apparently, some pieces of raw ginger found their way to an area about 100 kilometres north of Brisbane in Queensland earlier this century. The comparatively high rainfall and humidity in this area produce conditions which are perfect for growing ginger. So it became well established. But in the early days, the relatively high cost of production placed it at a disadvantage in the market by comparison with the much cheaper ginger produced by other countries with lower production costs. Then, in 1941, the supply of ginger to Australia started to run out. Remember, this was in the middle of the Second World War, when everything was in short supply. This provided the perfect opportunity for the Queensland growers to expand their production and sales. Five local farmers got together and formed a cooperative association in a place called Budderham. They started with only £25 between them. That was in the days when Australian currency was pounds, not dollars. So they set up the company with two wooden vats and 14 tons of raw ginger. But they went on to become the most successful ginger farmers in the world. In fact, nearly all the world's ginger now comes from the Budderham Ginger Factory in Queensland. 40% of the production is used in Australia, and the remaining 60% is exported overseas to places like Europe, North America, South Africa, and even to Asia, where it originated in the first place. So now let's move on to looking at ways of using ginger in the kitchen.
That is the end of section 2. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 3. Section 3. In this section, you will hear a radio interview with a scientist, Dr. Clark, on the subject of global warming. First, look at questions 21 to 25. As you listen, complete sentences 21 to 25.
Dr. Clark, global warming was the threat of the 1980s, but it seems to have fizzled out of people's minds. Why do you think that is?
Yes, in a way, you're right. I think scientists have become occupied with the task of trying to find out whether it really is happening, and if so, whether it's caused by human activity.
A greenhouse effect is, after all, a natural phenomenon.
Yes. As we know, naturally occurring gases float above us, acting as insulators that prevent heat being radiated into space.
And the fear is that the insulation might get thicker.
Yes. and because of this, the Earth might get warmer.
The latest prediction we've heard is that temperature will increase by about a third of a degree every 10 years. What are your feelings?
Well, this prediction is difficult to make. You see, the global climate is the result of a web of influences. Who is to say that a simple action such as adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere will not have several effects which might even cancel each other out?
And I understand that the prediction is hard to verify, whatever.
Precisely.
Why is that?
Because the Earth's temperature surges and subsides naturally. In fact, the best way of detecting global temperature change is to measure the temperature of the oceans as accurately as possible.
And this avoids the sort of seasonal fluctuations of the temperature of landmass?
Yes. In fact, an understanding of the oceans is crucial to understanding how the global climate works. The ocean transports heat around the globe. It's like a great reservoir of heat. A tiny change in sea surface temperature denotes a huge change in the amount of heat it is storing.
Now look at questions 26 to 30. As you listen to the rest of the interview, answer questions 26 to 30.
And now, I understand you're looking at ways of refining this measurement of ocean temperature.
Yes. For a long time, we've measured it by placing thermometers in buoys bobbing in the oceans, and also when ships draw water through their engines.
It's also been done by satellite, hasn't it?
Yes. But now data from a more promising system is being collected. This is the European Along Track Scanning Radiometer, or ATSR, a much simpler name. The ATSR orbits the Earth above us.
And what stage are you at with this?
Well, it's been up there 2.5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
It's an infrared detector that senses the Earth temperature with great accuracy, and this is what we need. We have to be able to separate out random changes in temperature.
I believe there are other advantages as well.
There are several. Every few days it covers the entire Earth, so it produces large quantities of data. It measures the temperature from two angles, which allows correction for any effects that the intervening atmosphere may be having on its readings. Its field of view has a width of 500 kilometers, and it measures the temperature to 0.3 degrees centigrade.
And it should go on for years?
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Clark, for talking to us today. And now over to you, Sue, in our mansion.
That is the end of section 3. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 4. Section 4. You're going to hear a talk about an animal conservation course. First look at questions 31 to 40. As you listen, complete the notes by filling in numbered spaces 31 to 40.
Well, we're delighted to have the opportunity to hear from Sue Gent, our specialist on student affairs, about a course with a difference.
Thank you, Tony. Many people think that conservation is just about saving fluffy animals. What they don't realise is that it is a war to save the human race from committing suicide. Strong words. But this was the belief of the famous conservationist Gerald Durrell. Gerald Durrell was an English conservationist who dedicated his life to the conservation of animals. And among his many achievements was the establishment of a zoo in Jersey. There, he set up the Wildlife Preservation Trust, which conducts courses on preservation and attracts students from developing countries. Many of these students are making their first trip away from home. The students who come to Jersey to study are of all ages. The first was a man called Yusuf Mungru, who came from Mauritius in 1977. He was particularly interested in the conservation of large African birds. When he arrived, there were only 4 Mauritius falcons, these are big birds of prey, left in his African homeland. Now, since he has returned, the numbers have increased to 200. When Yusuf first arrived in Jersey, he was unused to the freezing winters, so he liked to spend time in the reptile house. He said it was the warmest place on the island. So let's look at how students are chosen to participate in one of the zoo's programs. Well, according to their teacher, their work or study must involve animals. The zoo is proud of the fact that many of its graduates are now in positions to influence the way animals are kept and utilized for conservation. Once they start the course, the students have to spend a lot of time studying the English language. In addition to that, they also have to cover many aspects of animal conservation. This year, 27 students from 21 different countries are already waiting to participate in the intensive training programs at the zoo. In a principles and practice course, they learn both theory and practice. First, they learn the theory of conservation biology, working in areas such as veterinary medicine. Then they move into the practical part of the course and work with the zookeepers, where they learn to care for the animals. Over 350 full-time students have graduated since Yusuf Mungru, and, like him, some graduates have made big names for themselves in the zoo and conservation world. A former Chinese student is now responsible for captive breeding and conservation throughout his country. And a student from Mauritius who trained at the zoo is the present conservation officer for Mauritius.
That is the end of section 4. You now have half a minute to check your answers. That is the end of the listening test. You now have 10 minutes to transfer your answers to the answer sheet. End of side 2.